Welcome to a new episode of the Positive Pedagogy for Sport Coaching podcast. I'm the host, Dr. Stephen Harvey, here at Ohio University in the USA. Today I'm releasing an episode that was conducted with Rafa Simios, who is a student of mine here in our graduate program at Ohio University. Rafa has his own podcast, and that's called Coaches Talk, available on YouTube, and it's linked to in the show notes. I talked to Rafa about my own background growing up, why I got into coaching, my passion for coaching, as well as my journey that's took me from Stockton-on-Tees, which we call Middlesbrough because it's the town across the water, because it was good for the name, from Borough to becoming a Beaver at Oregon State University, then to becoming a Bobcat. And you get the idea of all the three B's. So that was cool. So we talk about my journey as a researcher and what that's got to offer coaches out there in the field and some of the different projects that I've been engaged in, etc. We also, today, I think, or July 8th, is that today, are releasing our third edition of the Positive Pedagogy for Sport Coaching book series on international cases. So I'll be getting online, doing an episode to talk a little bit more about that from an introductory standpoint, and then getting some of the people who contributed chapters to come on the show and share their experiences and talk in a little bit more detail about their chapters and some of their insights with respect to positive pedagogy for sport coaching. So I look forward to getting some more episodes out there here in the coming months. Enjoy this episode with me and Rafa.
Coach podcast number 6, today with Dr. Harvey, a guy that my first class in my master's was with him here in Ohio University, and probably the book that I most use, Coaching Better Every Season, he indicated me. And he was a massive role on how I developed my core values, my coach philosophy, and all these things that your beliefs as a coach, he helped me develop on mine. And he just gave me guidance and provide me tools to how to do it. And he's a guy that is in soccer, but he's in field hockey, he's in badminton, if I'm not wrong. But he's a guy that I have a lot of respect and I have as a mentor as well. So I don't know if I miss any, if I introduce you well, but you can introduce yourself for the people that are going to watch. Professor Harvey.
Yeah, thanks, Rafa, for inviting me. It's been a pleasure getting to know you over the last, I guess, 9 months, but it's sad that it got cut short by coronavirus, but hey-ho, we've still done the online, so it's good. I have a background in playing various sports to a decent level, particularly field hockey and badminton. Soccer was always a bit of a recreational kind of experience for me as I was growing up, and I was one of these kids who was really small, so at the time in England, there wasn't a lot of value for the kind of the ticky-tacker type of players, right? So I was kind of moved off to the side, so started doing a bit more field hockey at the time, and I was always pretty good at badminton. But as I grew up and started to get into, well, I did my teaching license at university, I got an opportunity to go to the United States and coach soccer, doing some soccer camps, and I could always play soccer, but like I say, I was playing a little bit more recreationally. So that's when I started getting a bit more involved in playing football and soccer a little bit more. I started studying to get my coaching licenses and got my UEFA B license eventually, and also, well, worked my way up to my UEFA B, and then when I was in the State Soccer Federation B license as well. So I've kind of hit a ceiling there in terms of licensing, but I also participated when I was doing my PhD in the Football Association back in England. They have a thing called the Fitness Trainers Award, which is a postgraduate qualification for those who are looking to become like fitness coaches in academies and Premier League and, you know, League One Division Championship clubs back in the UK. So I did that, and that was a bit of a who's who in terms of people who took that award, because some people who were on the award with have gone on to bigger and better things. And one of the tutors on the award was Tony Strudwick, who you've probably met, who's now the fitness coach at Wales. And another instructor was Sam Erith, who's the fitness coach there in Manchester City. So, and Sam and I, he's an anecdote for you, Sam Erith and I coached our first ever soccer camps in the USA together. So that was weird as well. So, but I haven't spoken to him for a long time. But anyway, so I've had a lot of experiences with soccer along the way. I also coached a college team back in England as I was studying for my UEFA B. And we won the British Universities Championships. It's like a little bit like NCAA, but it's not as a strong competition. We also played in like weekend tournaments. So one year we got to the quarterfinals of the Women's FA Cup there in the UK. So we had quite a strong group, and I was fortunate to have the opportunity to coach them for a few years.
How you figured out you want to coach was because you always play, and then you kind of in an organic way you got into it, or you always know you want to coach, or how you think that happened? How you said I want to be a coach?
I think when I was growing up, I mean, it was just whenever I had any spare time, it was I'd go out into the backyard and I'd be kicking a ball, throwing a ball, hitting a ball, doing something, and that meant I broke some windows and annoyed a few people along the way, like neighbours when the balls went over. But I was always doing something. I would go out with friends to the local park when you could, kind of those days on your own, and just kick a ball around again, play a bit of cricket, whatever we were doing. So it was just something that was ingrained. It was a strong part of my identity as a person. And so when I got the opportunity to like look at what I was going to do at college, I was kind of in that movement in the early 1990s when these sports science degrees were kind of coming to the fore in universities, and it was a new kind of the next kind of big thing. So I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. And I did have a mind to be a physical education teacher, but I did a degree in like just sports science, sports studies. And there was no like teaching license with it. But I went and did my degree, spent a couple of years out, and then went back and did a teaching license. But so being involved in sport, people always say to me, like, who's your mentors? I don't think I ever necessarily had a mentor, but what I would do a lot of the times is do a lot of self-coaching. My parents didn't have loads of money, so I would kind of like watch a lot of sport and try and take techniques and things. So like cricket, there was a wicket keeper called Jack Russell, so I would play around with my wicket keeping technique, standing up at the stumps to fast bowlers, and try and like practice certain things in the back garden to try and get myself better at what I was doing. And similarly, I'd do the same with badminton. So that kind of thing about coaching myself, I think, was important. And when I went to university and studied sport, I did like a 6-week placement, and it was at a leisure and events part of the local government in their leisure and events department. But they put me onto a scheme called Champion Coaching, where if you took a coaching license, you got that paid for free as long as you did a bit of coaching for that kind of local authority. So I did a field hockey coaching license one summer when I was off from university, and got kind of passionate about coaching. And then I would travel about an hour and 15 minutes on like two buses and a train to get from Newcastle to Sunderland to be able to coach some little kids field hockey. And that's kind of where it started. So then once I got my field hockey license, I did my badminton license. I play as one-on-one and paying a little bit more attention. So once I'd finished that and had a bit of time out, I was then I had some people I played badminton with that were physical education teachers. I mean, you know, back in Brazil, you've got to be a physical education teacher to be a coach. But I went and studied physical education at Loughborough in terms of getting a teaching license. And that, again, was a big, I think that gave me a lot of credibility in terms of knowing what I was doing and why I was doing it a little bit more. And as we know, a lot of good coaches are also teachers.
as part of their trade, like Gerard Houllier is one example. So I did that, and I think that really was something that set me apart, particularly at the time where I was coaching and there was not a lot of necessarily coaches that were also like teacher trained. And I did do my teaching license at a place called Loughborough, and that's where I got introduced to teaching games for understanding, which became part of a passion of mine from not just when I was coaching, but when I was also doing research. But I think that teaching games for understanding really fit well with my kind of way of learning to play the game, because it was all through, like, a lot of it deliberate play, making my own games up in the backyard, going out to a field with, say, soccer with three people and having to come up with a game that we could play with limited resources and just, you know. So I think that was a huge, huge thing for me. And it gave, again, some validation to the fact that I was doing the right things when I was coaching and that kind of thing. So that's kind of a bit of educational background, I guess, and now I've got into coaching.
Oh, yeah, that was a good answer. Going to that, I probably, from what you told me, you end up going on the United States first to a soccer camp. But once you end up coming to live in here, how was for what sport was, how was your first, because you came from the soccer camp and then you said I want to come here, or how that happened? That,
well, again, like everything, it's not too simple, unfortunately, to describe. But yeah, when I was doing my teaching license, I met a couple of guys, and they were guys that worked for this soccer camp company in the US. So I went through the interview process. Like I say, at the time, I didn't have a soccer license, but they're like, it's good because you're a teacher and they want teachers more than soccer people. But when I got over here, I, being the person that I am, I wanted to do my license, right? So I went and did like my introductory license back in England to sort of prepare myself to go and coach, and got some good, you know, insights there, and went through the training process for the camp company, which was good too, because it was very educational and it met my kind of educational background. And when I went to the States, I just fell in love with the place in terms of there was lots of opportunities. I found that the people, I was on the East Coast initially, and in Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire. And it was part of, I think, being off for the summer and getting lots of sunshine and being able to travel around. But I loved exploring the new places. I liked meeting the different people we met. I liked the fact that we had good credibility when we went to places, because we were, you know, the old classic, we were British, and it's just like, oh, you must know soccer really well. And that wasn't the thing. And we also got to play a little bit, and I'd not played soccer for a long time. And I kind of learned a lot by getting involved in playing soccer again. So when I went back to the UK, I had more advanced licenses. So I got involved doing that. And I started doing my master's degree at Loughborough University, and there came up an opportunity to coach the women's soccer team. So again, through that, I started doing my UEFA B, started having to learn more and get embedded. I used to have to kind of play a little bit more because I wanted to kind of show that I wasn't just like a teacher, but I could at least kick the ball from A to B when I was doing a demonstration. So I really got into soccer and that kind of thing. But then once I'd finished my master's, I'd been working at a local community college, and we had a soccer program there too for students who couldn't get in academies but still wanted to play soccer to a high level. So we developed the scheme at the university. We also had the FA had started the Women's Centre of Excellence for women's soccer, and that was at Loughborough, and a lot of the students were I have those students as their head tutor in my role at the community college. And the other thing that was going on at the community college was with soccer is we taught students at Derby County in the academy. We taught students from Nottingham Forest and Leicester City. So they were all in classes that we taught. So it was just like everything seemed to be getting soccer related. So that was a lot of background with soccer. But then I kept going to the US and doing it. And then I was really keen after getting my master's to go to the US permanently or more permanently. So I looked at opportunities for study and then got this spot to do a PhD at Oregon State. And when I was at Oregon State, that's when I was doing my fitness trainer's award and things like that with soccer. But then I went back to England after finishing my PhD, and I hadn't played field hockey for quite a while. So when I went back to the UK, I got a house living with a couple of guys that I knew who used to play field hockey or were kind of friends of friends. And I got put in touch with them and I started playing field hockey again. And that's when I started playing. I also got involved in coaching and I was teaching at the university. I was helping the university field hockey team where I was working, and that kind of snowballed. And then I started getting involved in some of the junior performance programs with England Hockey. And then I started getting involved with the junior international programs. I became a coach educator for England Hockey. So it kind of just all snowballed when I was back in the UK. But then unfortunately I had to kind of leave that all behind when I came to the US. But inadvertently I was down at, in London in 2013, they were doing some type of World League semi-final. And at the time, the US coach was a British guy and he was wandering around the facility. So I went up to him and started talking to him about being a field hockey coach, but moving to the US. And the women's team for the US had just moved to Pennsylvania. And I was going to be based in West Virginia with a new job that I'd got. So I chatted to him about maybe coming up and observing some of the training sessions. And that's kind of how I got in with USA field hockey and started doing some work with them. So when I came over to the States, I went and observed training. I got involved a little bit in their coach education department because they were trying to reorientate some of their coaching programs to focus a little bit more on teaching games for understanding. And they also knew I'd done some research in that area and had some coach education experience with England hockey. So it was like a match made in heaven kind of thing. So that's how I got involved a little bit more with the field hockey over here. And then that's how I subsequently started coaching at the World Cup, because I was involved with USA field hockey and knew they needed coaches for the 2017 World Cup. And so I ended up coaching one of the Masters teams there. And I think the other thing, I know I'm going on a bit, but I think the other thing that's important is I do a lot of research and I teach courses in the university, but I'm super keen to stay involved and kind of prove myself that I can walk out on the field and still make an impact at that level too. I'm currently coaching in a youth soccer club here in Columbus in Ohio. And I just, you know, I like the connection. I think we all do. That's why we do what we do. But I also find it as a bit of a challenge, especially when people come up to me and say, oh, you're just a researcher. So what the heck do you know about what goes on in practice? And I say, well, I probably know more than what you think. But at the same time, I understand practitioners who are more practitioners in terms of, like yourself, you're out on the field more than you're reading articles, and you're not necessarily doing research, but you are engaged in understanding research and how it can impact practice, but you're on the kind of the other side of the coin to what I am. But I think we need to have good relationships and working together, because I want to know as a researcher what works, because I want to write about that. But similarly, you want to know that what you're doing when you're out coaching is kind of evidence-based practice.
No, I agree with you. I always try to use what I believe and find an empirical method to apply what I believe. But I got to have something that has scientific embasement and things like that. So I think I agree with you. I always say that for me, the perfect coach is the one that can implement the beliefs, the way he want to do things, but he can apply these over with facts or science behind it, with the empirical method. So that's how I think is the hard thing to do it. But once you do it, that's what I believe, that's what is behind it, and go for it. My question is, from what I searched before our interview, I found 35 papers that you wrote. You correct me if you did more. How you start, how you start doing papers, and how was because of a PhD requirement, then you start liking it, And the second question is, how was your time as a mountaineer in Morgantown, West Virginia? Mm-hmm. But so two questions in one there.
Right. Well, we'll maybe do the mountaineer one after. I think when I was growing up, I wasn't really smart necessarily, like from an IQ perspective, but I was probably quite perceptive in terms of observing things that go on. And I was always kind of curious. And I think that that's what keeps us going in life, is the fact that we're curious about things and about trying to find out, not necessarily new ways of doing, but why something works the way it does. I'm not necessarily mechanically minded, but like I said, these more practical things, I'm quite interested in saying, well, how does one learn to do this technique and how does one apply to do that? So I think that analytical thing's always stuck with me. And I think that's why I like coaching, because it's quite, you have to observe and analyze and give feedback. And that's kind of that cyclical process. And research is a little bit the same, really. You have a bit of a hypothesis. So in soccer terms, it might be, well, we're going to play X formation against Y team. And you in a sense, are testing out that hypothesis when you play. And then what you have to do, like research, is amend your hypothesis kind of thing as you go along, depending on what you find. So halfway through the game, you need to sort of momentarily adapt. So it might be, you know, dropping one of your flat four midfield into, or playing a bit more of a diamond midfield. You know, and we're doing the same thing with research. So I think that that notion of being curious and analytical was always something that I was kind of passionate about. And I think I found a good balance where I could go and do research out in the field with real people and real students that would make an impact and be able to write about it. The other thing I found about writing is when I got into the game, because doing research is a little bit of a game, and particularly writing and publishing, is it was extremely hard. I came from a pretty working class background. I did an English literature A level, but I didn't get a very good grade. But writing was always a bit of a struggle for me. So I kind of did my thing. I kind of self-taught myself how to write. I would learn to write by reading the work of others, how they constructed sentences and paragraphs. I wasn't going back to what I did in English in school and thinking X or Y, you know, but I was kind of doing it in an applied sense. So that was a huge challenge for me. And then I set myself some short-term goals. Well, let's do this study, let's write this paper about that study. And then I got like cute at collaborating with different people who could kind of help me move things forward to a publication process. And then once you submit something for publication, you get feedback from reviewers and you have to deal with those. So I mean, I think that the notion of being curious was important. The notion of when you're writing things up for publication, that was a challenge to me and something that I would, like a short-term goal that I wanted to accomplish. And then once I finished at Oregon State, I got a job as like a professor, and I wanted to keep going because that was a side of the three-pronged job we have as a professor, is teaching, helping do service things around the university, committee work and things like that. And then the other one is doing research. And I didn't want to let either one of those plates stop spinning. So I was quite keen to keep my research going. And I went to Leeds Metropolitan University, and I was able to connect with a bunch of people that shared a similar passion to me about improving practice out on the field and doing studies to write about that kind of thing. So Professor John Lyle, Professor Chris Cushion, Dr. Bob Muir, you know, and these types of people that are quite influential people if you go and read the work that they've done. And then with that, I got PhD students and worked with them. And one paper you talked about, this visual methods one, was with Ed, who was a PhD student of mine at the University of Bedfordshire when I spent a few years there. So, I mean, it was just part of the academic. I don't think for the sake of writing them, I was writing them because I felt that they were on issues and topics that not only was I passionate about, but that coaches needed to know more information about. Like for example, there's a few studies on questioning in coaching. Well, questioning's quite an important behavior we use as coaches. So let's do quite a bit of research at looking about, well, how does questioning work? when people are coaching, that kind of thing. The paper with Ed was about reflections on visual methods. So we got kids to take pictures of, we gave them kind of disposable cameras, and they took pictures of the coaching environment and what, and then we used those pictures to, as prompts to get them to talk about their experience as participants in coaching environments. And that was able to tell us quite a lot about what children think coaching is about. And as Amanda Visek's shown, it's not about winning, because that's quite down the list. It's about kind of being there for the social element and engaging, trying to get better, improve performance, but learn new skills, right? Not just physical skills, but human, you know, humanistic skills and being a good citizen in society and things like that. So yeah, I think the research has been important. And then with being a mountaineer, we going from living in England in like Leeds and then Bedford, which is just sort of north of London, to going to West Virginia was a bit of a challenge. But we, like, I think you've got the idea. I'm always up for a bit of a challenge. And my wife likes to take a few risks along the way too. So we were like, yeah, this is a great opportunity. And so we just went into it with our eyes open and tried to soak everything up. I think the best thing about Morgantown is the college sport and the college town atmosphere. There's also quite a lot of international faculty, which helps you feel a little bit more at home. And, you know, but there's not a lot more to do in Morgantown other than the college sport. But I spent a lot of time watching soccer games, got to know particularly the soccer coaches there at the university. Unfortunately, we didn't have a field hockey program, but that's where I got the work with USA Field Hockey. You know, the schools were good for our children. Like I say, we got to know quite a few other people and make a lot of friends, people we still keep in touch with. I found sometimes West Virginia a bit polarized in the sense that you would meet some people that really love to meet people from different parts of the world, and then there was sort of some people who were a little bit more you know, they'd been in West Virginia, they'd not really left West Virginia, and so they were a bit like, I don't want to know you, you're just weird to me. But it was like anything, and soccer was a huge thing. Like, once I'd been there about a year, I started playing soccer in this local league, like adult co-ed league, and it was somewhat transformational because I helped coach a little bit at this local soccer club with the juniors, the wee ones, because my kids started to play a little bit, but I wasn't coaching a lot. But I did play a lot of soccer and I met new people. Some of those people were involved in the soccer club, so I was able to sort of chat to them about various different things. We had a PhD student from Brazil, Andre, and he was helping at the soccer club as well. So I did a lot of the Friday night mini-me's sessions, and where we just played a lot of games and set up multiple games. But like I say, I started playing soccer in the local community, and I played for one team and then started playing for another team in the winter. And that meant we met different groups of friends, and we managed to sort of pull some players from different teams to create our own team. And it was a very tight-knit group. We'd go out and have a few beers after the game and whatever. And it was that was really, really good. And we found a place where we liked to go and eat nice food and whatever. So that was a special time for sure.
No, that was a good answer about the Mountaineers. To come a little bit, now I just want to talk about how you went to WVU to Ohio, and how you feeling, what you're doing right now in Ohio, and how it is to develop coaches, and what you think is the most key things you could pass to the coaches that you got, because I know you probably get coaches from all over, different sports, different countries. In our class, we have a guy in Nigeria, Brazil, Argentina, Wales, in all different sports, we're talking about golf, judo, soccer, basketball, football. So how is for you this? So two questions again to wrap it up. How was coming to Ohio, and how is this challenge that you took now to form these coaches?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think that I worked in a teacher education program at West Virginia, and like I say, I was involved a little bit in some coaching. We did have an athletic coaching degree at the university where I was. Wasn't involved in it that much. A lot of the stuff I was doing in the coaching world was kind of outside, as I said, in the soccer club in Morgantown, and also with the USA field hockey predominantly, and a little bit of stuff with the Olympic committee. But when I came to Ohio, I moved from this physical education, teacher education, to this coaching education. I think that one of the big things to say is that coaching education really in the United States, it's a bit of a wild, wild west. Yes, we have governing bodies and some do run licensing schemes like US soccer, but there are some others like USA field hockey where they don't really do coach licensing. They have coaching awards, but it doesn't necessarily give you a license to coach, if you know what I mean. The other thing, as you know, I mean, sometimes to become a college coach or even a coach in a local club, the only thing you really need to do is your concussion training and your safe sport training. And by the way, we should have to do those things. And we should really have to have a minimal licensing. So these were some of the differences in moving from teacher education, where it was very bound by policies, procedures, and certain things you had to do in the teacher education program at the university to become a teacher, versus coach education, which was a little bit, like I say, the wild, wild west, where there was no real policies and governance. That has started to change with the work that the USOPC, the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, have been doing, the work on behalf of the governing bodies in terms of the athlete development model. And these are some of the things that we try and educate the coaches in our programs about, rather than necessarily just focusing on things like X's and O's. And whilst we focus on, and these are important, the relationships and building a coaching philosophy, we also want to educate you about best practices, ethical considerations, what kind of licensing is appropriate for you as a coach, and things like that. A struggle with coaching as well is because you come from various different sports, it's hard, and because these licenses cost money, we don't do any, again, licensing for coaching within our coach education program. So it makes it a little bit difficult when people come and do our coursework, because they go, oh, then at the end of your course, I'm going to be licensed coach. And you go, well, no. But where we're at with what we do is we try and develop, I guess this is a bit of what a lot of people are arguing now, but I think that what we end up doing is making you a better person by the end of your degree with us, and particularly the master's degrees. We do have an undergraduate degree, but generally a lot of our students are in our graduate programs, be it online in a master's in coaching ed or a master's in coaching soccer. But I think that the humanistic component is really important to us. I think that one thing I've tried to do, and I know Dr. Allenson was probably talking about the same, and Dr. Carr's the same, is we try and facilitate learning experiences for yourselves. We try and focus on integrating the group and getting you to discuss and have some discourse about different coaching issues, to share your experiences, because we know that there's value in sharing ideas from different sports that you can bring into your sport. But we also understand that there's value in sitting together as a group of soccer coaches and having a chat about systems and formations, that if you were doing that and you had football coaches, as in American football, they wouldn't know anything we're talking about, and vice versa. But I think our general thing is we try and get you focus on make you a better person, get some knowledge about how to continue to keep developing relationships, and just develop that curiosity and a critical eye to what it is that you're doing. I'm biased, but I think that well, I know that me and Dr. Allinson have a lot of humility, and Dr. Kai, and what we're doing, but I think that our impact is probably more broader for the work that we're doing than we give ourselves credit for. I think that for me, like I say, my impact is not just teaching the classes, although I have a more minimal impact because I don't teach as many classes, but I also have my research work. And I also know that I'm a stellar contributor to the work that goes on in the faculty. So we've done a lot of changes to our curriculum and programs over the last few years. And those have been stimulated by the work done by my colleagues and then led by particularly myself in my role as a program coordinator. And those things are important in order that we offer yourselves coming into our programs cutting edge information based on what is going out there in the world. So currently I'm trying to develop a class performance and conditioning. I'm not a strength and conditioning coach, but I'm entering into that world a little bit more to go back to my days as the fitness trainer, so that I can put together a good course to give you a good experience as students. Similarly, we have a course called performance analysis. So I'm connecting with various people out there in the performance analysis domain to make sure that what we do in the class is recognizes what is going on out there in the, you know, not just performance analysis, but also in data science and data analytics. And albeit we're going to do it in a very abridged way, you know, the notion is that we're trying to give you some insights in that course into the skills and experiences that you need to be successful out there as a coach.
No, that's a good wrap it up on the program. And I always do three questions before we conclude. That is, who was your best coach you ever had? Who was the best player you ever coach or play with? And who was the best friend sport gave you? So you gotta... you don't need to say one. Some people, they stay on the wall. We say they say 2, 3, but normally I tell people to say 1. So the best coach, best player, and best friend that sports gave you.
Well, what I would say in terms of friends is when I played field hockey when I was a junior player, we had a group that just one of those groups where we were all the same age. We played together, we hung out together, we're still on kind of social media together, and they were my best friends. And whenever I go back home, they're the first people that I kind of contact. So they were all the lads that I played field hockey with. And I didn't just play club field hockey, I played kind of representative level field hockey with them, and I've subsequently, you know, been coaching with some of them, and all of us, I think, have gone on to in our respective fields through the experiences we had playing field hockey. We've just gone on to do great things in all of our lives, and that's been a testament to the way that we were not necessarily coached by a particular coach, because we had various coaches, but we were mentored a little bit by kind of the club we were in and some of the individuals within it. We weren't taught how to play the game of hockey or field hockey necessarily, but we were taught to be what it takes to be good people within a particular environment, like how to be good representatives of the club, how to work hard together to get better at something, how to motivate each other and be respectful of each other's needs and things like that. So those folks are still my best friends, and if anything about living abroad tells me is that that's what I miss out on is having the daily regular interactions with that group of people. In terms of the best coach, I didn't, like I say, I have a lot of coaches, and a bit like my university academic career, I've moved around a little bit, and with clubs I played clubs. But there was one badminton coach that I had who I got some private lessons off this guy, but I wasn't doing private lessons with him all the time. His name's called Peter Higman. But I would play in some of the local tournaments, and he would string rackets at the tournament. But as soon as I started playing, and he wasn't getting anything out of doing this, like no money from me for doing it, he would always stop stringing the rackets and come and sit by the side of the court and watch my games. And then at the end, he would bring me over and we'd have a conversation about how the game went. And I think that taught me that, you know, the little things are important, and that taking time out to do things for people for free sometimes goes a long way to making people better people. And so I think that, and this guy knew the game like the back of his hand. He was an interesting chap, but I think also you have to have a little bit of an edge to be a top coach. And sometimes we write on things like positive pedagogy that you do have to get on people at times. And he was very good at reading when he needed to get on you and kind of push your buttons. And he had a bit of a wild side to him as well, but I don't mind that, as in outside of coaching. He knew when to sort of, you know, do the accordion, you know, when to dial it in and when to spread it out. So that was quite good. And I always appreciated the time that he took. And we recently connected back on LinkedIn, and we were chatting to each other and sharing things. So it was good to have a bit of a catch up. And this guy is like a top badminton coach in the UK now, and has been an excellent proponent of the game back there. And it's quite a small sport. So I was lucky to have interactions with this thing. Best player. That is an interesting one. I'm trying to think about, is this the best player that I've coached?
Can be coach or play with. Yes.
Dr. Ashley Allenson. No, I'm kidding. No, I played one soccer game with Allenson, and he was good. I'm trying to think. Trying to think of the various teams I play with. I had some girls, like when I was at Loughborough, there was one girl that played for me. She had parents that were British and American. She ended up called Julie Spearing. She was a goalkeeper. She played in goal for me at the weekends, but she was in this England Academy squad. And she was a phenomenal goalkeeper. She played for England, I think 16s, 18s, maybe 21s too. And she went to play at Texas A&M, a college. And again, great goalie, good leader on the field. So that's definitely one from a soccer perspective that I was fortunate to have. Because at the time, women's soccer was quite new, and goalkeeping particularly was a real, like, it was all over the map, right? But she was someone who exhibited all the good qualities you would want in a goalkeeper. You know, good communication. She had good physique in terms of she was tall enough to get the balls over the head. She had good athleticism, and she'd make good decisions. So that, certainly she was a good one. But probably if I had a bit more time, I could think of some other. But I was fortunate to have her play for my team that particular year for sure.
So, Dr. Harvey, I want to thank you for all the insights of your timeline and all these good stories, some fun ones, some really interesting ones, some learning ones. I don't know if you want to leave a message before concluding, but I always leave it up to you to leave a last message. And then for me, we cover everything.
Well, I think it's pretty simple. I think what you get the idea of my journey is continually being what we call like reflexive, and in that being reflexive is sometimes being critical about what it is you do. So be reflexive, be curious, and the old saying, you know, never stop learning, because I think we can always get better at what we are doing. So I think I see each new day as an opportunity and a kind of challenge to get better. And I know that some of the other coaches that I've worked with who, you know, I've seen go on to do great things are of the same kind of mindset.
No, sounds perfect. Thanks for giving me the time. And I really appreciate that, Professor.